CBSI on the World, the New World Report, Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. I'm John Batchelor. To Panama. Panama Canal Zone, an independent state and a presidential year, remembering that Panama, as the professor has taught me, Panama is a banking center and heretofore has been regarded as exceptionally stable because it has income from the canal. It has income from natural resources, copper is mentioned. And it has the banking center for much of the Americas, which is a good source of income, good years and foul years. However, Professor, there is a presidential election. At the same time, a former executive remains in the Nicaragua embassy, to my memory, here in Panama City. And the man now leading in the polls for the election, which is imminent, is said to be closely associated with a former president who is condemned as the man in the Nicaragua embassy, as a corrupt leader of the country, though he remains popular. This looks like Panama is tumbling into a vulnerable place. There are three elections that are important right now throughout the Americas: Panama, Mexico, and Venezuela. Is Panama at risk?
John, for me, Panama is still in a stable place, although there are causes for concern, the reflection of, may I say, the sour mood that Panamanians are in. Although there is some corruption in Panama and some institutional difficulties, in general, the institutions are fairly solid. There have been some problems, the shutdown of the first quantum copper mine that accounted for 5% of GDP, delays in infrastructure projects, some protests last year over the end of subsidies, and certainly some of the fiscal difficulties that came from the reduced levels of operation of the Panama Canal due to drought. Having mentioned that, it is relevant that the person who has been leading in the polls, Ricardo Martinelli, harkening back to a time in which there was, good times in Panama, pre-COVID-19. So when he was ruled ineligible to run, basically because he lost his appeal and apparently before he took refuge in the Nicaraguan embassy in Panama, was headed for jail. But now his vice presidential candidate, Jose Raul Molino, has inherited some of that popularity. And now in his Realizing Goals party, Realizando Metas, is by far the front runner with about 30%. Behind him is a previous president, Martin Torrijos, with 14. Behind him is a reformist candidate, somewhat promising to clean up the country, Ricardo Lombana. And behind them are some of the more traditionalist candidates from the old Panamanista party, Romulo Ro. The current vice president comes in, near the bottom, Jose Carrizo, who's seen as widely corrupt by many. Clearly, Panama is not falling apart, but this tone of populism and discontent, I think, reflects the fact that the country that is so critical as a banking center, as a logistics center, as an item of interest for Chinese investors, is an area that is of strategic importance, not only commercially, but also militarily, historically, for the United States, is in a long time close U.S. ally in the region, is under a lot of pressure.
I believe that the candidate Molino has made the remark that if he is elected president, he will close the Darien Gap. Is he the one who said that, Professor? Because that seems a bridge too far for what I know about the Darien Gap. It's not a gate that you shut. It's a vast triple canopy jungle.
It is. If Ricardo Martinelli, the former candidate, was a populist, Molino is kind of his populist understudy, if you will. And so this is not unlike the situation with the U.S. border. And so it's reflecting the frustration by Panamanians that you have large numbers of people from Venezuela, from Ecuador, from Haiti, from Cuba, from China, coming through the Darien Gap. Molino's comment was really probably directed at that frustration among Panamanians and the idea that at least theoretically he would do something. And in reality, already the U.S. is working to support the Border Control Service, CENTAFRONT, and the Panamanian National Police and others, their Air and Naval Service, SANAN, to try to control that area. But again, it's a jungle area. It's a very difficult area to control. And so that would be a very tricky thing to do. But I think it reflects the kind of populist character character of Molino, and previously his the previous presidential candidate, Martinelli, in looking at some of these problems more than anything else.
To Mexico, the big election in the Americas pending. The president, AMLO, very popular, especially as a TV personality, cannot succeed himself. There is no second term. His party, Morena, has chosen the former mayor of Mexico City, Ms. Sheinbaum, as a candidate, who has maintained that her chief goals as the new president will be water management and renewable energy sources. Her challenger, a state senator named Galvez, who is an entrepreneur, a self-made woman rising from the romance goes that a cart in the streets to commanding lots of startups, and entered into a debate. So it was Galvez versus Sheinbaum. I don't have the Spanish to know how the details, but I do know the highlights in Reuters reporting was that Ms. Galvez took a fairly clever shot at Ms. Sheinbaum by saying, I wouldn't drink a glass of water from Mexico City's tap. And I believe that Ms. Sheinbaum displayed that she has a punch, too. I missed what she said, Professor. This debate, was it entertaining for Mexico? Did it get a lot of attention, or is this a shrug?
Well, John, like many debates in U.S. presidential elections, this debate, the second of three, the last one will be on May 19th, was probably more entertaining and reflected personalities mudslinging than really getting into the issues. However, there are many ironies in that you have Claudia Sheinbaum, who is, again, probably a brilliant technocrat, not particularly charismatic, but really is the endorsed understudy of Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who is much more kind of the grandfatherly figure in a movement that is, Chicago-style, machine politics. And so in many ways, Sheinbaum in AMLO couldn't be more different. And at the same time, you have Xochitl Gálvez, who is, again, a scrapper. I think of her as kind of a Sarah Palin figure who says what she thinks, but is also connected with the conservative. And so to the degree there were some substantive discussions, it was Sheinbaum talking about some of the relatively, technocratic solutions that she has for Mexico's programs. She wants to continue to work on water quality. She wants to continue to attract more nearshoring investments by building more patio space in which the investors could come in. She wants to continue Mexico's transition towards green energy, which is something that her predecessor, ironically, AMLO, certainly did not really do. She has a lot of technical level good ideas. And yet at the same time, there is the baggage that her party, the Morena movement at the state level and in other level is considered, there's substantial questions of corruption. There have been accusations of the ties to at least the Sinaloa drug cartel, if not others. And so predictably, you had the scrappy Xochitl Galvez talking about Sheinbaum as basically the candidate of the narco party. You had Sheinbaum, again, very genteel person, but in a very snarky way, shooting back that that Galvez was la corrupta, the corrupt one. And then you had the also-ran candidate, Jorge Alvarez Mayanez, that everyone just calls Mayanez, who, again, was trying to kind of get a word in edgewise to distinguish himself with some pro-business recommendations for creating jobs in places in the north of Mexico, where his own party has been relatively successful, places like Nuevo León. But at the end of the day, so there were some pieces of good ideas there, but it ended up being mostly a pretty ugly, snarky fight, indicating that even when the leading candidates are two women, that does not necessarily make the tone any more positive in Mexico's complicated politics.
The USMCA, both candidates, I presume, will continue, or is there a challenge to that? That was the accomplishment of some years ago, but it could age.
Right now, John, there's no suggestion that there's any fundamental challenge to USMCA. Galvez, of course, is comes from a party tradition that the PAN and the PRI and the PRD that again looks is a relatively pro-business coalition. Sheinbaum, again, it was her own Morena party that had negotiated or renegotiated USMCA. And so my understanding is there's even a desire for both candidates to continue to attract more investment. Now the how and what might be slightly different, but I think there is a happily there's an overall acceptance really among all three candidates that Mexico's integration into the North American market through USMCA is important and needs to continue.
Venezuela, an election named in July. However, caveats. Maduro regime is not recognized as legitimate by many governments. I think the U.S. government may be one of them. In addition, Maduro's apparatus forbid the candidacy of Maria Corina Machado, who easily won the opposition primary held earlier this year. She is forbidden to be on the ballot. I also mentioned there have been detentions from the opposition parties, random detentions, it appears from the outside, at least one murder that we know about. According to Chile, a former officer in the Venezuelan military taking refuge in Santiago was murdered in his apartment by gunmen, and his body was hidden in a suitcase in concrete, the mark of professional gunmen. However, the finger from Chile pointed right at Caracas, and now we have three new detentions. All of that is background to an election that's called for July. Professor, do you believe that the election will go forward? And if it does it satisfy the critics such as the United States government?
Well, John, the election on July 28th that probably will go forward. I suspect that it will partially satisfy the U.S. government, for which the Biden administration is certainly looking for something positive to pull out of this process. And yet, at the same time, I think it's clear that it is very incomplete what the Maduro administration has done. And so right now, the Biden administration already declared that you have the wind down of the opening up of permitting oil sales under something called General License 44. They've replaced that with 44A, which basically says that companies who are doing business in the country right now have a short period of time to kind of wind down or cease their operations. Although if Maduro does something significantly democratic, which does not appear likely at this point, that could be undone. But even there, it's only partial because Chevron, Repsol, and Eni, who operate under a different general license, GL-41, continue to sell their oil. Now, as you also pointed out, Maduro, I think, is worried. He continues to try to respond to threats to his continuing presidency. And so initially we recall when Maria Corina Machado was, had such a popular showing, winning 93% of a primary that had record turnout. Maduro and his team probably said, wow, this is a risk that we cannot take. And so not only was Maria Corina Machado inhabilitated, but the person that she tried to put in her stead as her basically personal secretary was also not allowed to register. And yet at the end of the day, the third the candidate who was finally accepted, Edmundo Gonzalez, a low key diplomat, again very kind of responsible, although perhaps not as charismatic as Maria Corina Machado. The polls have said that 46% of Venezuelans are so sick of Maduro that they basically will support anybody, maybe even a horse, if the opposition said this is our candidate and alternative to Maduro, while only about 21% say they would support Maduro. So that creates options like arresting or eliminating all of the candidates, or at the very least, Edmundo Gonzalez. And certainly there is indications of acts of intimidation by going after other opposition figures. There's just a series of people jailed of the opposition, and again the government trying to weave plots within plots. The most recent one was claiming that the Maduro administration loyalist who basically ran a lot of the corrupt oil operations for years, Trica Lasami, they've now turned on him. But they're now trying to suggest that Trica Lasami was somehow caught up in an evil plot to work with opposition figures like Leopoldo Lopez and Julio Borges to try to enrich himself and sabotage the government. And so at the end of the day, Maduro seems to be pulling out all stops. It's likely the election will go forward under questionable conditions. And again, given that Maduro does control not only access to the electoral machinery and the security forces and other things, there are many different ways that Maduro can keep himself in power unless he just gravely, gravely miscalculates.
And the U.S., is it likely to bless the election as qualified as it is? That has to do with sanctions, whether they're lifted or not.
My sense is that the U.S. Probably is unlikely to give the election a complete green light. And again, the more that things look good for Gonzalez and the more dirty tricks and other activities that the Maduro camp has to do, just like the previous presidential election, the more likely that the U.S., the Biden administration will find that there was not sufficient guarantees, there were substantial questions in order not to completely lift sanctions. But that's probably going to come down to, how dirty the election is, how much question there is, I think it's going to be close. There's going to be something, but at the end of the day, there are going to be substantial questions.
Professor Avenelis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. This is New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.